May I have your attention, please? Shalom, everyone. My name is Son of Yisrael Abel, future priest Kifa Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now time to start finding your seats for Sabbath services.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Son of Yisrael Abel, Shamil Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael Abel now entering into the sanctuary. I now present one of the sons of Yisrael Abel, White Buffalo.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today, I would like to be speaking about From the Hills of Rome Go Forth the Crusades. Constantine, by this sign shall thou conquer. Crusades, from Wikipedia, were the Crusades or military campaign sanctioned by the Latin Roman Catholic Church during the High Middle Ages and Late Middle Ages. In 1095, Pope Urban II proclaimed the First Crusade. Now notice, the Crusades didn't start on this date. The Crusades started in the beginning with Cain. All this is the way of Cain. If you would turn to Yada 1 verse 11, this should be a very familiar scripture. Yada 1 verse 11. It says, woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain. They have gone in the way of Cain. The whole world has turned in this way. They have run greedily in the error of Balaam for reward and have perished in the rebellion of Korah. The way of Cain is to kill those who followed Yahweh's righteous laws. Abel practiced righteousness, and he was killed for it. This is the way of Cain, to kill those who practice Yahweh's righteous laws. This killing, this crusading, it went on since the beginning. It went on with Cain since the beginning. And in case you're wondering why Cain killed Abel, Scripture shows us why Cain killed Abel. If you would turn to 1 Yochanan, 1 Yochanan 3, and verse 12, it says, not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and murdered his brother. Notice, Cain, this murder started from the beginning with Cain. He murdered his brother. And why did he murder his brother? Because his works were evil and his brother's were righteous. Cain's works were evil. The killing and the crusading, those works are evil, and his brother's was righteous. So we can see why Cain killed Abel. And remember, these world leaders are also following after the Pope in these crusades. They're following after this way of Cain in these crusades. I have some article titles here I want to read you. The first one is Bush Pledges a Crusade Against Evildoers. And remember, those evildoers are the ones who break the laws of Yahweh. Those are the evildoers. And this crusade is evil. And that article is from the Associated Press. Bush's War on Evildoers, and it calls it here a Holy Crusade. That's from irregulartimes.com. And another one is Bush's Democracy Crusade. Notice, crusade. defies public opinion. And that's from antiwar.com. So they tried to kill the saints of Yahweh during these crusades. They were trying to kill off Yahweh's last day's witness. Satan was trying to kill off Yahweh's last day's witness so Yahweh's work could not be fulfilled. They tried to kill the saints during these crusades, and it was prophesied. If you would turn to Revelation 6, and verse 2 on page 794, it says, "And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it had a bow. And a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer." Notice, with this fake righteousness here, the bow of not the instruction of teaching peace, but of murder, of killing. "And he went out conquering and to conquer." If you would turn to Daniel. Daniel 7 and verse 25, it says, "And he will speak great words against Yahweh." It's talking about this beast, this little horn. "And he will speak great words against Yahweh. And will wear out, mentally attack, to cause to fall away," causing these people, misleading them in the teachings of Satan to where they will not do their job. They will fall away from the house of Yahweh. "Cause to fall away, the saints of Yahweh, and think to change times." They changed these times that Yahweh had set. "Yahweh's feast days and laws, and they will be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time." I would like to exhort you, brothers and sisters, I would like to exhort you to go in the way of Yahweh. Go in the way of Yahweh, not the way of Cain, as we read about in Yada 1, verse 11. Let us conquer righteously. If you would turn to 1 Yochanan for my closing scriptures, if you would turn to 1 Yochanan 5, verse 4, "And whoever is begotten of Yahweh overcomes the world." And this is the conquering power that has overcome the world. The faith he who is Yahweh gave. If you would turn to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 56, it says, "The sting of sin is death. The power over sin is the law." Let us have this power over sin. Let us live according to the law of Yahweh. And let us use the bow of teaching peace instead of murder. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Son of Israel Abel Nebiah Hawkins.
And now I have the great honor and privilege to present to you one of the Sons of Israel Abel, Deacon Yaakov.
Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today I'll be speaking on striking will not be in Yahweh's kingdom. Now first, from the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, striking, or the word strike, is word number 4272, and it means to dash, afflict, attack, to smash, crush, or to destroy. Now in the second book of Israel, that's the Going On to Perfection, number 9, verse 11, it says, "Now this is the proving time that Yahweh has given to prove us, or to prove ourselves to him, and to show him we will not strike with the fist, we will not strike with our hands. We will not strike with tools, instruments, or anything that will hurt someone else. If we are slapped on one cheek, we will turn the other to them. If you don't prove yourself to be this kind of person who can control himself, you won't make it in the 144,000 priesthood. It's that simple and that plain in all of your scriptures." Now, Yahshua was the best example of not striking back, not fighting back. If you remember, he was beat all night, and he still forgave the people. If you turn to Yochanan Mark, Yochanan Mark 15, and verse 16 to 20. It says, "And the soldiers led him away into the hall, and they called together the whole company. They clothed him with purple, plaited a crown of thorns, and put it on his head, and began to salute him, 'Hail, King of the Yadayim!' And they beat him on the head with a reed, and spat upon him, and bowing their knees, they worshipped him. And after they had mocked him, they removed the purple from him, and put his own clothes on him, and led him out to nail him on the stake." Now if you turn to Luke 23, Luke 23, verse 33 to 38, it says, And when they came to the place which was called the Calvary, they nailed him to the stake there, with one criminal on his right hand and the other on his left. Then Yahshua said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." And they divided his garments by casting lots. Now when they stood watching, when the people stood watching, but the rulers with them kept sneering, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Messiah, the chosen of Yahweh." And the soldiers also ridiculed him, coming up and offering him vinegar, sour wine. They would say, "If you are the king of the Yadayim, save yourself." For there was also written above him, in the letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, "This is the king of the Yadayim." So you see there in verse 34, Yahshua says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." He never retaliated. He never striked Adam. Now, Yahweh does not expect retaliation. In the fifth book of Yisrael, chapter 9, verse 33, it says in verse 3, it shows Yahshua, how meek and humble he was. It also shows how humble and how meek you have to become, with no retaliation and no hatred. And then also in the fourth book of Israel, the Reverence of Yahweh, chapter 1, verse 136, it says, "Being patient with one another and forgiving one another. We want to hold grudges, but I'm going to show you where Yahshua did not hold a grudge." And that's what he expects us to do. We should not hold any grudges. Now, even Yahweh's laws tell you not to retaliate. If you turn to Leviticus 19 and verse 18, it says, "Do not seek revenge." That's saying, do not retaliate. It's not, oh, you can retaliate if someone hits you hard enough. It is not saying that. It's saying, do not seek revenge, nor bear a grudge against one of your own people. But you shall love your neighbor, whether a brother or an enemy, as yourself. I am Yahweh. Now, retaliation is the trap that the Muslims fell into. It's the trap of war that was laid on by the authorities of the Vatican. Now, that's coming from the Pope, their power is coming from Satan. Now, in an article, it was entitled, "Pope Francis, U.S. Action against ISIS, A Just War." It says, "Pope Francis is giving his blessing on efforts to stop ISIS terrorists from attacking religious minorities in Iraq. The journalist asked the Pope if he approves of U.S. airstrikes against the jihadist army." Now, if you notice, the U.S. airstrikes, they're striking. Remember that word, striking. It says he replied that it is acceptable to stop an unjust aggressor. and that the church teaching allows for just wars. Now, the peaceful solution talks about morality, and how morality, you won't hurt yourself, others, and possessions and property, or the environment. And if you have moral character, you would know there was no such thing as a just war, because that's killing and fighting, and damaging people's property. Now, moving on, it says, the pontiff also said he's considering visiting northern Iraq to show solidarity with persecuted Christians, but has not made a decision. Now, if you turn to Revelation, we know all these things, their power is coming from Satan. If you turn to Revelation 13, verse 1 to 4, it says, and I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was similar to a leopard, and his feet as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Now that word power, Pastor brought out, that it's the force. It's their might and their strength. But it's power through deception and lying. And then that word authority is the power over the kings. Now verse 3 says, and I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered or followed after the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with them? So you see, that's where their power came from. The dragon gave the power to the beast, and that dragon is Satan. That's side note O. It says Satan, Revelation 12, verse 9. And if you turn to Revelation 12, 9, it says, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. She was cast out into the earth, and her angels were cast out with her. Now this is where they get their power. Power, as we know, real power, real strength, is from not striking back, resisting that urge. If you turn to Jacob 5, verse 6, that's on page 955. Jacob 5, verse 6, it says, you have condemned and killed the just, but he did not resist you. If you resist that urge to strike back, we have to resist that urge to strike back. Now, if you turn to 1 Kefa, it's a few pages over, 1 Kefa 2, and verse 18 to 21, that's found on page 958, 1 Kefa 2, verse 18. And it says, servants, be subject to your rulers with all fear, not only to the kind and gentle, but also to the harsh. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering, because he is conscious of Yahweh. Now what glory is it if you receive a beating for doing wrong and you endure it? But if you suffer for doing righteousness and you endure it, this is commendable before Yahweh. For to this you are called, to do righteousness, because for this doing righteousness, Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. And we know how Yahshua did not sin. He was perfect. Now, we see there, endure. Endure it for Yahweh. Because in verse 20, it says, but if you suffer for doing righteousness and you endure it, this is commendable before Yahweh. So in closing, remember, don't strike. If someone hits you, be like Yahshua and turn the other cheek. Because strikers will not be in Yahweh's kingdom. Now that's all the time I have, so if y'all please stand. I'll turn it over to the Great Khan Al Yanai.
Shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. Today, my title is Yahweh Protected Yeshua and the Branch in His Plan, as shown in Genesis 49, verse 6. If we'll turn quickly to page 43 of the book of Yahweh, that's Genesis 49. If we'll read the third verse, it says, Reuben, you're my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, exceeding in rank. And I'll go on down to verse 4 here. It says, turbulent like water, you will no longer excel, for you went up into your father's bed and to my couch and defiled it. You know, it's a sexual sin right there. And I go on to verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. Their swords are weapons of violence. Now, war is in their DNA. You know, it came from Cain, and it came down all through the line, even to us in these last days. And all we had to do is just look around the world, and we see what's going on. It's fighting and hatred, illegal lust, willingness to retaliate, not to practice self-control, wanting to strike back all the time. They bred strife from one generation to the next. And it kept on going, you know, and it came down, of course, to us in this last days through the genes, through the bloodline. And we're going to see a little bit more of that today. And, of course, this took place because of sexual sins. And sexual sins lead to STDs, viruses that go into the brain and cause confusion in the minds. And, of course, they cause changes to take place in the brain to where the ability to practice self-control becomes a problem, you know. So we'll just read from an article here, an excerpt actually from chapter 5 of Neuropathology, an illustrated interactive course for medical students and residents by one Dimitri Agamanolis, MD. It was published 2014. So most viruses reach the brain and spinal cord via the bloodstream. Some viruses, including herpes simplex virus, that's HSV, varicella zoster virus, VZV, and rabies, may also travel to the CNS, that is the central nervous system, this is the brain and the spinal cord, travels along the nerves. Viruses can only reproduce inside a living host. They use the cell's machinery for their replication and damage or kill the cells they infect. Additional brain damage is caused by the cell-mediated immune reaction that they elicit, causing severe vascular and tissue injury. That is causing damage, causing injury to the brain when these STDs get to the brain. And we're going to see what that is going to result in very quickly. If we, I'll read another article here. It says, impaired decision-making, impulsivity, and compulsivity, addictions. Effect on the addictions, effect on the cerebral cortex, that's a part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, which is the frontal part of the brain. We're going to look at it closer now. This is by Tom Howarth, PhD, and others. It says here the prefrontal cortex enables us to make rational, sound decisions. It also helps us to override impulsive urges. If acted upon, these impulsive urges can cause us to act without thinking. That is, without thinking in quotes, because we're thinking all the time, but, you know, without thinking of the consequences is what we're talking about here now. Without thinking of the consequences of our actions, you know, we act first and then think later. And, all right. I don't know if you can all see this. This is the brain, and, of course, that's cut so that we can see the inside of it. And right here is the prefrontal cortex. It's actually the frontal part of the brain behind the eyes, behind the forehead. That's the prefrontal cortex. That's the part of the brain that we're talking about right now. Yeah, so it says that's the region that helps us to override impulsive urges that if we act upon will cause us to act without thinking about consequences. Obviously, this ability to inhibit impulses is very helpful. In that it enables us to function well in society. It protects us from harm by allowing us to consider the consequences of our actions. You know, allows you to stop, to think, consider the options, and then proceed with the right choice. However, when the prefrontal cortex is not functioning properly, for example, as a result of STDs, the opposite occurs. In other words, we're not able to practice self-control. But there is something. We can reverse the situation. In fact, a further study that was done on this said if you give in to that urge, that violent urge, what occurs is as time goes on, the brain begins to change. The amount of serotonin produced by the brain starts to drop. So the brain changes. When you yield to it, you progressively become more violent and more violent. You know, so that's what it is. So in other words, acting out the violence itself actually has a negative effect on the brain itself. It actually makes it worse. Okay? So we go on now to another article quickly here. It says, brain chemicals involved in aggression identified may lead to new treatments. This is from Science Daily. And new studies are helping scientists gain deeper insight into the neurobiology of aggression and violence. One analysis of brain imaging studies has revealed that brain structures involved in making moral judgments are often damaged in violent individuals. Another study involving teenage boys suggests that disruptions in the brain region linked to impulsive, aggressive behavior may underlie a certain type of violent reactive behavior. Remember the breed strife, you know, violence from generation to generation, which has come down to us in these last days, which Yahweh says we can overcome that urge, you know, if we practice the peaceful solution as we're being taught by the house of Yahweh. So that's what comes down to us in this time period. And I'll quickly look at one more article here. It says by Maria Musa G, in her paper entitled Violence, a Nauseous Cocktail of Genes and the Environment, and published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine, Volume 96. This was in 2003. And she pointed out the role of genetics, the role of genetics in programming individuals who exhibit violent behavior towards other people. So we practice violent behavior without restraint. It goes into the genes. It doesn't end there. It goes to the next generation. You know, and if people don't repent, and it continues to go down the line until it gets to us in these last days. So going back to Genesis 49, verse 6 there, Genesis 49, for read verse 6 says, let me not enter the council, let my glory not be joined to their assembly. For in anger they killed a man, and for their pleasure they hamstrung an ox. You know, let my glory not be joined to their assembly, to their churches, you know, to the various groups they have out there. You know, and it shows the violence here, and then it shows the nasty things that it did to these animals and the consequences of these actions that go into the brain and cause the problem to get worse. And if you notice, this is talking here about what is going to be become of the 12 tribes, which is the whole world as it is now, because as Pastor shows us that these bloodline has been mingled with all of the world. There's hardly any bloodline that's untouched by this. It says, before you should notice in verse 1, the last four words there says, in the last days. In the last days. And of course, I'm just going to move on quickly here. So, but Yahweh had a plan to protect Yeshua and then to protect the witness Israel from all of the mess that we see around us and, you know, what the world became. And we're going to see some of the steps that were taken to actually protect their bloodline and protect them. You know, you can imagine the amount of work that has to be done in these last days and all the prophets concerning the last days witness, you know, him being of quick understanding and so on. That wouldn't have been possible if, you know, he wasn't guarded, if his ancestors were not protected. And we're going to see in greater detail how this came about. It says, so if we look on down to verse 10 and 11 here, and same Genesis 49, it says, the scepter will not depart from Yada, nor a ruling staff, lawgiver from between his feet until he comes to whom tribute belongs and the obedience of the nation is his. And 11 here says, tethering his donkey to the vine, tethering his donkey's colt to the choicest branch, he will wash his garments in wine and he will wash his robes in the blood of grapes. Okay, so it's talking about two people here. And of course we see in verse 6 here where it talks about the protection, saying, let me not enter their council, that my glory not be joined to their assembly. We know, of course, that the last witness is from this same bloodline. We know he's from the tribe of Levi. And we know that righteousness also, you know, you find righteousness in his ancestors. In fact, his own father would rather suffer loss, suffer pain, than to break his word. Okay? And that is what you see. And that all of that is adding up. It's cumulative. It's adding up, and then what you get is what we have now in the greatest teacher in the world, Israel Hawkins. So Yahweh made the body in such a way that the genes have a central role in passing on heredity. And the way Yahweh made it, like we said before, we know that Yeshua had righteous genes in his bloodline, was why he was influenced by those righteous genes, you know, because there's influences in genes. And these influences could be positive, it could be negative, depending on what we're putting in our genes or what our ancestors put in their genes. But we're not a slave to that. We can make our own choice, we can chart our own course, we can decide to follow righteousness, to turn around at whatever influences, negative influences we may have inherited. We have the opportunity or the ability to overcome if we work hard at it. That's the point I'm trying to make here. So if we look quickly at this article also, this is from Breed and Sanchez, 2010, said both environment and genetic makeup influence behavior. This is Nature Education Knowledge. This is volume 3, number 10, page 68. It says, today we easily recognize that both genes and the environment influence behavior. And scientists studying behavior focus on the interaction between these two factors, the environment as well as the genes. And we're going to see the connection of the environment. Cognitive neuroscience, another article here, notes for Wine Lecture, Genes and Behavior. This is by J.J. Wine, 2000, last edited in that's March of 2000. The evidence for a genetic component in human behavior is overwhelming. All behavior is the joint product of heredity and environment, but differences in behavior can be apportioned between heredity and environment. So when a person has inherited righteous genes, the person has to be placed in an enabling environment to allow those influences, righteous influences, to persist, to allow it to come to the fore, so that righteousness follows. Which is why we'll see shortly that when, in order to bring forth Yeshua, Yahweh had to create a kingdom that would be guided by the laws of Yahweh. We see that in calling out the people in these last days too, Yahweh created an enabling environment here to be able to bring these people to perfection. So we're going to see that clearly as I go along. But the environment is very, very important in this whole mix, because the environment, of course, includes all the influences that you're exposed to on a daily basis. According to Dr. Bruce Lipton, in another book, that's The Biology of Belief, it says, new science reveals that information that controls biology starts with environmental signals that in turn control the binding of regulatory proteins to the DNA. Regulatory proteins direct the activity of genes. Signal transduction pathways are responsible for the interaction and interpretation of most of such signals into specific proteins and cell products. For example, neuropeptides that we saw in a video some time ago that actually affects our behavior. You know, and of course things like serotonin, also neurotransmitters that are also very, very important in the way the brain functions and the way we behave. So if I'll have video one, please.
Signal transduction is a method of communication used by cells in which extracellular signals, or signals outside of the cell, are converted into intracellular signals, or signals inside the cell. That in turn generates a cascade of specific cellular responses. It is needed when a signaling substance, such as a hormone or a neurotransmitter, cannot pass directly through a cell membrane. For example, protein-based hormones, which are hydrophilic and polar, cannot cross the lipid and nonpolar membranes, and must therefore use signal transduction to transmit their messages.
Okay, so as we can see in that video there, signal transduction just refers to the way signals from outside of the cell affects activity, what is going on within the cell. And those signals don't have to be chemicals. Well, they can be chemicals, but then they could be light, could be, you know, light in terms of what you're seeing, in light entering the eyes. You know, the eyes are the light receptors of the human body, of course. And it could be sound, it could be so many different things, music and a lot of other things. So those signals that cannot enter the cell has to be translated into recognizable form inside of the cell, which is what signal transduction is all about, how messages get passed from the outside, from the environment, into the cell. So I'm just going to go on here. Now, we said that when those signals get into the cell, when the influences from the environment get into the body, remember, we are just, well, I'm a person speaking to you, but then again, I'm about 100 trillion cells speaking to you right now. Okay, 100 trillion cells working in unity, speaking to you right now. Now, all of these signals coming into the cell then get transcribed into cell products, like, for example, proteins, like we said before, neuropeptides that affect behavior, that affect the way we do things too. So the influences have an impact on how we behave and how things turn out with us. So I want to show you here, I don't know if you can all see this. Okay, so this is like a snapshot of a portion of the cell and signals coming in from the cell, what we just saw in the video right now. It could be light, it could be molecules, and they get in and they set off a chain reaction. Eventually they head to the middle of the cell, which is here, the nucleus. The nucleus is where the blueprints for the production of cell products, proteins, and so on, that's where it is. So it goes there, and then it influences the activities that go on there in the nucleus. And we're going to see how that takes place in the nucleus. But basically, what we experience, what we see around us in our environment, the kind of influences we expose ourselves to, go a long way to affect us, to affect our biology. So it's not violent music for the sake of violent music. It's not sexually explicit movies and Hollywood for the fun of Hollywood. It actually has biological impact, all of the, including the food we eat and so on and so forth. So we're going to see it more closely now. So, of course, the environment, if we look at our dictionary reference, dictionaryreference.com says the aggregate of surrounding things, conditions or influences surrounding, that is, the conditions including influences that surround us. That's our environment. So we said the environment has a role to play in this scheme of things, along with the genes. Now, surrounding MA in a 2001 article, Reprogramming of Gene Function Through Epigenetic Inheritance, stated that the science of epigenetics makes clear that there are two mechanisms by which organisms pass on hereditary information, two methods, two mechanisms. These are the genetic and the epigenetic factors. Of course, the genetic comes from the genes as it is. The epigenetic factors talks about the modification to those genes from the events taking place around you. Okay, from what you experience, from the kind of diet you're eating, and so on, and from what you're doing, from your practice. Remember, you can change your genes through practice and righteousness. Okay, so this is what this is talking about here. So these are genetic and epigenetic factors. So these two mechanisms provide a way to study both the contribution of the genes and the contribution of the environment. That is the epigenetic mechanisms in human behavior. So in the last decade, it continues, epigenetic research has established that DNA blueprints passed down through the genes are not set in concrete. In other words, we can change them, okay? We're not a victim of our DNA. We can make a choice to do righteousness. Environmental influences, including nutrition, training, stress, and emotions, can modify these genes, and those modifications can be passed on to future generations. A landmark Duke University study published in August 1, 2003, the molecular and cellular biology, found that an enriched environment can override genetic mutations in mice. And you see this, I don't know if you can see this picture right here. Okay, now these are sisters. One of them is agouti. Agouti meaning that it's like an albino, you know, that's agouti. It has the agouti gene. Usually, agouti mothers will only give birth to agouti males. In other words, the two of them are supposed to be like the bright-colored one. But you find that one of them is bright-colored, the other has a normal mouse color. And the reason that is the mother was exposed to diet, you know, methyl-rich diet. That actually caused the normal mouse, though it has the genes for it to be bright-colored like that other one, and then to be obese and diabetic. But it became normal, having a normal life, healthy, and with the brown fur instead of the bright-colored one. In other words, we can actually make change if we're willing to do that. That's the point I'm trying to make. With the combination of righteous food righteous teaching, and righteous living. So, and for this, we see in Isaiah 49, verse 2, you know, if you turn quickly to Isaiah 49, that's 561, page 561. If I just read that very quickly. All right, 49:2 here. It says, "And he has made my mouth like a sharp sword, and the shadow of his hand he has hidden me, and made me a polished shaft," polished, that is trained, "and in his quiver he has hidden me." In his quiver, that is among his workers, he has hidden the last day's witness. And if we go to 41, Isaiah 41 now, that's on page 555, Isaiah 41, 8 and 9, says, "But you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, you whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called you from the farthest parts of it, and said to you, you are my servant, I have chosen you and have not cast you away." Okay, so we see here in Isaiah 49:2, that Pastor Israel Hawkins was hidden for a certain time period in the Oklahoma Dust Bowl, that people were running away, trying to get away from the dust and all the what was going on there at the time. But here he was hidden, protected from these negative influences that could have interfered with his person, with his mind, with his genes. Okay, and it says here, "In the ends of the earth," as we've seen here in Isaiah 41, 8 and 9. So he was trained, polished, made like a polished shaft, so that he could come back to Abilene to start this work that we are a part of right now in these last days. So, and of course, this is also shown in Revelation 12. But Yahweh saw to it anyway that he was raised in a certain way. You know, talking about hiding him, it wasn't like he was hidden to where, not a hide-and-seek game, not that you couldn't see him physically, but that he was protected, hidden from the negative influences, the negative environment that would have affected him and, you know, affected his person in the end, and, of course, affected the plan of Yahweh ultimately. So he protected him for that. Yahweh saw to it that they did not smoke marijuana in Muskogee. If you remember, Muskogee. So going back now again to Bruce Lipton's book here, it says, "When stem cell scientists culture stem cells and they see the cells are not doing well," he said, "they look at the environment of the cell and not the cell itself, because most of the time what is causing the problem will be in the environment." All right? So in the same way, the environment of the cells, you know, like I said, is, you know, the food we eat and, you know, all the substance, contents of the blood that flows around the cells. So if we eat unclean food, becomes the environment of the cell, and of course the chain reaction will start that leads to disease and leads to death ultimately. And of course STDs, of course, that get into the body, that consumes the environment of the cell, which will affect the cell negatively too. And righteous information coming forth from Yahweh's house, that constitutes positive influences that will also create a positive chain reaction that will make the cells better, make the genes to be better. And of course that is going to make us better, make us a little bit every time closer and closer to being like Yahweh in character. So that's the point I'm trying to make. So the environment of the cell is important. The environment that we are in is also important. And it is in the plan of Yahweh also that in trying to bring forth Yeshua, that he created a righteous environment by setting up a kingdom that would be guided by his laws. And of course, for 40 years, after leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, Moshe taught them and trained them and was patiently guiding them in this way of life, creating the enabling environment for them to blossom. Okay, and he was doing all of that, and Yahweh was directing all of this. That was protecting the bloodline, guarding the bloodline of Yeshua and the last day's witness, as we will see, more of it as we go along. So Yahweh had to make sure that the food that the ancestors of Yeshua, as well as not just Yeshua alone, not just the witness, but their ancestors also had to feed righteously. The food had to be clean, because whatever they were eating, remember, it was going into their genes. Whatever they were doing was going into their genes too. We're going to see a video shortly that shows an experiment that was done in Sweden proving this, that what you feed on, what you eat, and things you're allowed to get into your body goes into your genes and is going to affect generations down the line. So Yahweh had to see to all of that, gave them a set of laws to guide them and to protect this bloodline, to protect this last day's work in the process, and that's the whole point. So Yahweh had to make sure all of this. And you see in Leviticus 18, verse 25, if you quickly turn to page 97. As 18 verse 25 here, it says, and the land is defiled, therefore I punish the sin thereof upon it, and the land itself vomits out her inhabitants. Now, if you remember all the wars that were taking place, and not that Yahweh hated these people, you know, but Yahweh had to make sure that these animals that were defiled and people who will not make any change were removed from the land. That was to make sure that he was actually preparing, guarding, and protecting this bloodline by so doing. So he was trying to clean up the land, to clean up, in preparation for Yeshua, and of course for the last day's witness too. The reason Cain had this frustration that he wanted to the point where he wanted to murder and did murder was because of the uncleanness that he was eating from the earth. Okay? That was it. All of this would go into his genes. Like we said, it began from Cain and then it persists even to this last day. And that's the point I'm trying to make. So if we quickly look at, of course we say it goes into the genes and then, through all the generations. If we look at another article very quickly now by Marcus Pembry and Lars Bigren, that's a Swedish man, and others, in an article entitled Sex-Specific Male Line Transgenerational Responses in Humans, published in the European Journal of Human Genetics. That was in 2006, volume 14, pages 159 to 166. This showed in a research carried out studying well-kept records of annual harvest from a small Swedish community of Overkalix in Norrbotten showed that diet, availability of food, and lifestyle of grandfathers affected the development, health, and life expectancy of their grandsons. While grandmothers' lifestyle and availability of food and, also affected the grandchildren, that's the granddaughters now. It was sex-specific. The grandfathers affected their grandsons, the grandmothers affected their granddaughters. So, and that's what they were eating, and their lifestyle, those who smoked and those who didn't smoke and so on. And of course, the study went on to find out that those who lived in times when there was famine, they had not enough food to eat, their grandchildren actually lived longer. Those who lived in time of plenty, their grandchildren were dying faster. Well, the key there is what grandparents do can affect generations down the line. But again, I guess the reason why they were grandchildren were affected and were dying sooner in time of plenty was they probably were eating a lot of pork there too. So that probably contributed to that. But the bottom line is it affects generations down the line, the food that we're eating, whether it's righteous or not. And of course, Yahweh had to deal with the food situation too and gave his dietary laws to that effect. So we can see how lifestyles can actually go down and persist through the generation. So anything short of Yahweh's plan will just not work. If we can have video 3 very quickly.
This small Swedish town may hold the evidence to launch a medical revolution. Overkalix lies huddled on the edge of the Arctic Circle. Inaccessible and remote, it was cut off from the rest of the world for most of its history. Marcus Pembry has traveled here to meet his colleague. Marcus received an email from a doctor in Sweden. The email was sent by Olle Bigren. He was studying the population records of an obscure town in northern Sweden, Överkalix. What made these records unique was their detail. They recorded births and deaths over hundreds of years, but they also had accurate details of the harvests. Bigren appeared to be seeing links between generations that confounded his expectations. It appeared that a famine could affect people almost 100 years later, even if they never suffered a famine themselves.
Ollie first reported that the food supply of the ancestors was affecting the longevity or mortality rate of the grandchildren. So I was very excited. I responded immediately.
Pembry had a hunch that the incidence of one disease, diabetes, might be an indicator that epigenetics was involved.
Specifically, I wanted to know the results of the diabetes because this was the one that I thought might involve the imprinting.
Sir Ola trawled the records for any deaths due to diabetes and then looked back to see if there was anything unusual about the diet of their grandparents.
A few months later, he emailed me to say that indeed they had shown a strong association between the food supply of the father's father and the chance of diabetes being mentioned on the death certificate of the grandchild. So, of course, I was really rather excited by that because it really did look as if there was some transgenerational effect going on there.
It looked as if there were clear links through the generations between grandparents and grandchildren. They found that the life expectancy of grandchildren was being directly affected by the diet of the grandparent. It appeared that Overcarlix held the key to finding the first evidence of epigenetic inheritance in humans.
All right, so you've noticed here that the diet affects generations down the line. Okay, so Yahweh had to deal with the food for that reason. And even after having dealt with the food, Yahweh had to have a breeding program, which we've learned so much about in the house of Yahweh, and you know how Yeshua was brought forth. And a pastor often compared this with dog breeding, you know, because the rules in dog breeding also are similar with the rules with human beings too. In fact, in the article "How to Build Dogs" by the National Geographic, we see that dog breeders combined traits from different dogs and accentuated these traits by breeding these offsprings with the largest hints of desired attributes. In doing this, dog breeders actually tinkered with the genes that determine how dogs look and behave. In other words, they were working with the genes, you know, though many times they may not have known it. So there are rules in DNA, like I said, in dogs that also affect human beings. And they found in another project called CanMap, a collaboration among Cornell University and UCLA and National Institutes of Health, the researchers gathered DNA from 900 dogs, you know, represent about 80 breeds, and they found that the genes that determine how they looked, you know, whether the ears were erect or whether it was floppy or whether it was they had a lot of fur, the kind of fur they had, how big the dog was, all of this had to do with depended on the neighborhood about 50 different genetic switches that actually did this. So where the breeding was taking place, that is, it was actually dog breeders were switching on and switching off these switches to actually express certain gene types in these dogs. So continuing on from this National Geographic, it says, it has been clear since the rediscovery of classical genetics that humans obey laws of heredity identical with those of other organisms. The central features of classical genetics were observable in humans by following simple inherited common traits. And so we obey this, it's the same rules, whether it's, and if we look here, righteous gene is red there. You know, this is just a representation. And of course, the opposite of it would be the unrighteous gene, that would be blue there. And you have a man and a woman. So let us say this man is a carrier. He has some righteousness in his genes. Though he's not expressing righteousness, he's not been taught the peace of solution. And then the woman, the same thing. Now, if you put them together, you have this child here has RR, that is both unrighteous genes, has no righteous genes in his diet. So he might end up like Cain, who knows. And then these two here, they have, you know, the righteous gene, hints of righteous genes in their genes. And of course, this one has, you know, it's a very richly righteous genes in his or her genes, as you see here. And what you do in breeding is, if you take this one and breed with maybe another, a person like, not sisters now, if you breed one with RR, I mean this lowercase RR with this one here, you're going to be getting it, it's going to be purer and purer as you go on from generation to generation, to where you're going to have a generation that's going to be very rich, highly concentrated righteous genes. That's the point I'm trying to make here. Because you can see, You can see, like Pastor was saying, that in the future, we will end up having children who will not even sin. Okay? So you're combining R with R, and you're getting all of those. And that's how it was down the line. And of course, certain people wanted to be part of that bloodline, and certain ones were kept out of it. You know, some were even killed to keep the bloodline pure, you know, in trying to protect that bloodline, to keep everything perfect and going smoothly, so that the plan of Yahweh will be fulfilled, the plan of bringing forth this kingdom. And I'd like to, and of course, this plan has been from the beginning. I'd like to turn very quickly now to Yohanan 1, verse 1, in closing. It says here, in the beginning, that's on page 814, in the beginning was the plan of Yahweh. The plan was with Yahweh, and the plan was Yahweh's. The same plan was in the beginning with Yahweh. All things were done according to it. Without it, nothing was done that was done. In this plan was life, and that life was the light to mankind. And verse 12 here says, but as many as received him, to those he gave the authority to become the sons of Yahweh, to those who believe the testimony of Yahweh, that he means. So, in protecting the bloodline of Yeshua and the last day's witness, Yahweh had to take all of this series of steps. And of course, in ensuring that we build righteousness to be like Yahweh, to be like Yeshua, to be like Pastor, we also have to be gods. Gods of this way are not allowed to change. And we also need to do what to provide. Yahweh has provided for us a great environment here to be able to learn righteousness. And Yahweh has given us the greatest teacher in the world to feed us with righteous influences that will help us to change our genes and be achieve the ultimate human potential that Yahweh has set for us. And if you'll all please stand. I'd like to turn it over at this time to the great Khan, Elia Heiler. Okay.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. In today's news, the first thing we're going to play, and I want everybody to pay close attention to what we're going to play first. There's no audio, but I hope everyone can begin to grasp the magnitude of what is taking place when we show this. We're going to show, last night we had an event down at the lower end, the exhibit, and of course they were expecting lots of rain. They were calling for rain, and Pastor, once again, this is not the first time. This has occurred a few times, and if many of the priests can attest to things we've seen firsthand by standing up and looking for the moon, seeing requests from Pastor be honored right before our eyes. Praise Yahweh. But of course, he was, you know, he said, I sure would like for that rain not to come so our people can enjoy it. So we show the weather and pay close attention. There's a circle, but watch the clouds of rain disappear right when they get to us. They constantly just fade out, fade out, fade out. And of course, we had a wonderful night last night, and that was a blessing. Also, we have President Obama. These are some things to show you early in President Obama's presidential career. It shows how the House of Yahweh was already working. And you can see by some of the comments that President Obama made years ago, of course, the House of Yahweh been doing this for a long time. Watch what he says and how he says it, and see the effect that this work is having. See how Yahshua is removing the Pope from his place through Yahweh's house, through Yahweh's spokesperson, and every person that ties themselves to that spokesperson. Also, Pat Robertson exposing once again the paganisms of Christianity. The paganisms of Christianity. And then he also has a few choice comments to say about Pope Francis himself. Now, of course, he's getting this information. Remember, Pat Robertson has been in this business for a long time. But he's never said things like he says until he heard them come from Yahweh's anointed Malak. That's where these things are coming from. It starts off with a man asking Pat Robertson a question about Christmas. Well, who's causing these questions to come up? It's this man out here in Abilene, Texas, who keeps stirring these things up. And keep this in mind, we're stirring things up so bad, Pastor is so bad, popes are retiring instead of dying now. They just can't handle it anymore. Okay? Also, the leader of Gambia, a country in Africa, paid close attention to this man's stance on homosexuality. He is being considered the most anti-homosexual human being on the face of the earth. And listen to what he refers to LGBT standing for. He is very correct in what he says. And of course, if he was to tie what he has in with what the House of Yahweh teaches, this man will, he will be a strong follower of Yahweh. But he has a little bit of righteousness, but he doesn't have it all yet. And then, of course, NATO is pushing Russia's buttons. We want to make sure everyone understands. Watch the tension growing. It's not decreasing, it's growing. And NATO is gathering. They're setting around Russia, and they're also bringing in China. And never forget, NATO is the army of the Pope. What you see NATO doing is what the Pope wants done. He can't shut this work up, so the next best thing is to rule by force. Try to make people submit through force, because these followers he once had are now speaking out against him. And then Iran also makes a comment that they're not worried with Israel because they have 80,000 missiles pointed toward them and ready to go. So keep this in mind. This could blow up at any time. If we could go ahead and play the news. At this time, if everyone will please stand, I'd like to introduce the greatest teacher in the world, the great Kahan Yisrael, Abel Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. Hey, you're looking great. Praise Yahweh. No, really, really. Praise Yahweh. You may be seated. And thank you, the cheering section down here. This is wonderful. Praise Yahweh. I got to make an announcement here about the peaceful solution scene down here this evening, and I hope I didn't miss it. Hope I didn't bring my no, I brought my notes. Praise Yahweh. I don't know if you understand what this is about, what we're trying to put together down here. Now, come Tabernacles, you're going to see a, Yahweh willing, you're going to see a self-supporting farm on that area down there. Hopefully you'll see corn being raised and ayob, watermelons, pumpkins, pumpkins. That's this fall now. So get ready to see a wonderful scene. But now, up until I was born, now this is the way everyone they had. You know, Yahweh said his own vine. You'll have your own vine and your own fig tree. Well, of course, you'll have a piece of land that you're going to grow that food on. That's what he's telling you there. But anyway, the chickens, they're not just for show. If you remember, there was no refrigeration. In my lifetime, they invented a gas refrigerator, a kerosene refrigerator first. That it would had a little kerosene burner underneath the thing, and it would heat this gas, and the gas would circulate that causes the freezing to take place. I think that's called Freon, maybe. But anyway, it would circulate through your refrigerator, a big old stack on top that would actually turn it to ice. And this is how they started the big ice plants without electricity. You could buy large cubes of ice, 50 pound or 100 pound or whatever, and take it home with you, which we did. They made ice boxes to put them in that would keep it for like a week at a time. 50 pounds of ice would keep in that ice box for about a week, and you could chip off of it with an ice pick and have iced tea. And that's what we did, but I remember the first part of this setup. We didn't have an ice box, so we wrapped the ice in worn-out quilts and things like this to keep it from thawing out. But the chickens now, if you wanted a chicken, you didn't go to the freezer and get a chicken. You didn't have a refrigerator to keep it in either. You went to the chicken house and you got you a fresh chicken. Fresh. You can't get any fresher than that. And if we had chicken and dumplings, the first thing Mother would do of a morning was go out and get a chicken and dress it and get the thing to cooking. With our family, it was more like just pure dumplings. I mean, you had taste of chicken. But Dad said she could make more dumplings than any person he ever saw out of one little chicken. Well, the fact is, she made about three pots, you know, because we'd have it like for 3 days in a row, and chicken and dumplings. But it was mostly dumplings and gravy and cornbread, which is very delicious. Mother was a great cook, and you're going to find that out when you eat her pudding down here today. Did any of y'all get that pudding yesterday? You did? Oh, praise Yahweh. Well, that's as close to my mother's recipe as I've ever seen. The broomcorn Johnnies would fight over that. they did, literally. But anyway, the chicken, you'd go to the pen, get a chicken, and that was your chicken dinner. That was your refrigerator that you kept the chickens in. The goats not only gave milk, but they also gave meat on certain occasions when, you couldn't butcher a beef or something like that with just a family of nine. I think the way my family ate, they could eat a big beef at one meal. The way we were eaters because we were hungry people. When dinner was served, there was never a gripe about dinner that I know of. I can never remember anyone griping about the food. But the kid goats, you could pick a goat that was just the right size and would last 2 to 3 days. So you had your goats running around on foot. You didn't have them in a refrigerator or freezer. Cows were the same. They gave milk to, like the goats, they'd give more milk. And of course, butter and cheese and cottage cheese and clabber milk. We have all of that now, clabber milk and whey, and we have the best cheese, I think, in the world right now here at the House of Yahweh. What you're seeing here is much like what you see in the Scriptures. In fact, it's all Scripture there, what you're seeing. And it makes me think of Eliyah and Elisha. Now, those were the two main characters in that college. This was a biblical college, a House of Yahweh, a Book of Yahweh college. But it was, they raised their own food. They didn't go to Walmart every day. In fact, my mother, the best I can remember, she would go to town maybe twice a year. At spring and at fall, and she would get her supplies. Supplies being mostly legumes and, of course, sugar and salt, things like that, pepper. But that would be her supplies for the summer or for the winter. You'd get enough to last all winter, family of nine. And, of course, if you had kinfolks come, which we did, those supplies disappeared, and that's one of the reasons that I remember some bad winters with no food, because of kinfolks coming in from California, and they had big families too. My aunt moved to California to get away from the drought and everything else, but she came back to visit the poor people and ate our food. No one could resist Mother's cooking. It was rich, I'll guarantee you that. It's like we have here. It's just like we have here in this cafeteria. Many of her recipes are being used at this time. But in the peaceful solution scene here, you have a school of the prophets going on here, just like you had in Eliyah's day. And if you remember, they used oxen for plowing at that time. An oxen is a very strong, either a cow or a bull, a castrated bull. And, of course, they can pull a plow by themselves. They can pull a heavy plow. They're like this horse we have down here. We have a breaking plow, and I noticed one of the field trips where the boys were going to school, they had this breaking plow out there, and the boys all got a hold of it. There's about 20 or 30 boys got a hold of that plow, and they couldn't move it. Well, that horse now, that shows you how strong that horse is. They hooked the horse to it that same day, and the horse wanted to run with it. She wanted to trot. That was nothing for her to pull. Well, that's the way an oxen is. An oxen is very, very strong, as the scriptures show. And you could hook plows behind an oxen, and they didn't work as well as a horse. They weren't that trainable, but they would work if you led them. And they're still used today in places like China and places where you can't get tractors to raise into swampy areas where they raise rice. Well, they're still used. Well, the same thing now was going on with Eliyahu and Elisha with the school of the prophets, as it's known in the Holy Scriptures. And when Yahweh sent them out, which he had to. He had to send them out to gossip or preach, whatever you want to call it, but they took the message out. And of course, the two main characters was Eliyahu and Elisha. But there was a lot of other characters there in that group. In fact, it was a large group. I would say it was equal to this one right now. If it be my scriptural guess that it was equal to this right now that we have set up right here by Yahweh at this time. And, of course, they had a bit of land. I thought about it on the stage today. I should have looked to see what size the average farm was in Oklahoma when I was a child. But I would say 40 acres was a big farm. And, of course, from that 40 acres, you would have enough pasture land to pasture a cow and a calf, and or two or three, maybe four. But you would also have a garden spot, and you would have a field which you would raise for a money crop or something to put back for the cows, chickens, and horses to eat through the winter, and of course us to eat. But you can take a small garden, and anyone who knows anything about canning, conservation, you can take a small garden and you can put back a lot of food. We would go in the springtime, and when right now the poke salad's high as my head here on this 44 acres. And we're already canning poke salad. In fact, we were doing that before the feed. Poke salad is one of my most loved vegetables cooked. And I've never eaten it raw because I was told that you can't because it's such a great diuretic. You got to get rid of part of that before you eat it or it'll cleanse too heavily. But we would be gathering poke salad, but there's a lot of other things out there right now. I mean, this evening, the men didn't get this yesterday, but the women can see the part of the crops coming in because we have apricots and peaches already ready that is raised at the School of the Prophets in this time period. Yep. And we're going to have them available down at the Peaceful Scene this evening. There could have been a lot more things, but, you know, getting the time to do this and get ready for 2 billion people, which we're striving to do at this time, you know, it takes some time. And, of course, the men were working right up at the last second trying to get this done and everything else done. You know, the world's talking about they can't find any jobs. We're talking about we got more jobs than we got hands to put them. I'm writing a news release now jobs aplenty on the farm. I think that might stir up some interest. The news today, by the way, is the same. Only thing the news medias are growing, and I think it's up to almost 80,000 this morning, news medias that was running that one article yesterday, and it keeps climbing. It came up another 1,000 from about 6 o'clock this morning till just before I came in here just now. But the horses, they were used every day. I can't remember except on the seventh day of the week when we would stop and we would let the horses rest and feed them, and of course we'd take care of the cows and the chickens and things like that. Visit the chicken pen and see. We've got a small herd of chicken down there. We got a couple of goats and we got the horses. Should have had a milk cow, but didn't get to it. Got a donkey too that loves children, and children can actually do a lot of work with a donkey. They can haul wood, they can plow fields. If you get a donkey trained and that donkey loves you, he'll do anything for you. If he hates you, he'll balk and you can't get him to do anything. They get very stubborn. Well, that peaceful scene now is going to be open from 3 to 5:30. Last night, the men stayed down there all night, I think, playing around. They couldn't leave. But we can't do that this evening. The feast that we came, believe it or not, is tomorrow. This is the second day of it, but tomorrow is actually the feast. So don't forget your ablutions and getting ready for the Sabbath. But anyway, the scene hopefully will be open from 3 to 5:30. And you will see from that, if you'll just imagine, the farm that I was raised on and the brush arbor. Now, the brush arbor was quite a ways away from my house. Dad wouldn't let them put it close to my house, privacy sake. But he would allow them to put it on his land. And, of course, Dad would build it, him and a couple of neighbors. But that was where we got quite a bit of education from those brush arbors. And quite a bit of, as Pat Robertson said, well, I won't repeat his words, but he got pretty nasty about what the Pope brings out and what Christianity brings out about Christmas and so forth. If you notice, these preachers, the reason they're doing this is because we're forcing them to. We're putting the truth out there, and the people are asking them questions. So... And if they know and they tell a lie about it, the people are going to know they're lying. So, and the people usually present them with some truth and say, some proof, you know, and say, is this truth or not? Well, they can't say it's not. You know, this is truth. It's history. It's in black and white. You can't deny that Christmas is a pagan holiday. It was celebrated in Egypt, and of course that's what they're. The 12 tribes turned back to. There was money in it, and they didn't want to give up that money. And Easter and Christmas and Halloween, they were all celebrated in Egypt in celebration of the death of the pharaohs and who they deified after they died. And of course, then later the rabbis were known as lords, and they celebrated them as with memorials to the dead, as Isaiah 65 said. But all of that came out of Egypt, is God worship. And I'm sure Pat Robertson knows that too. But come Tabernacles now, Yahweh willing, we'll have all this set up to where you can see that you could actually make a living and supply your family well, especially if you had water like we did. Dad's place was had Old Walnut Creek going through it, and it weaved back and forth through it. It kind of etched it off going through our property, And that thing was full of fish. And at any time of the year, you could go there and catch fish, and that kept us going. And that's the reason, I guess, I love fish so much. But every person at that time, you know, you can't find anyone that knows anything about farming now in the city. But at one time, every child, by the time that child was 6 years old, he was learning about driving horses, milking cows, building fence, plowing fields. The boy had an education, you know, that was 10 miles ahead of city dwellers on his first day of school, first day of getting on the bus. A farm boy. I'm talking about a farm boy. They knew it all. And of course, that's the reason now that we have, if you want to call it FFA, education, that they get that education here from 12 to 4 today. We need help in the kitchen. If you have, if you can possibly help us, we need help in the kitchen, the women. And from 6 to 9 p.m. this evening, we need help in getting ready for Pentecost. So if you can help us there, it would be greatly appreciated. They changed my clock. I can't see it. It normally sits on the right-hand side, and I can't see it. So that's a great excuse for today, I think. Barack Obama has kind of opened a hornet's nest here, as you could see from his talk. And, of course, they're saying some nasty things about him with these crusades. And I'm so glad, because this is opening the door to what we've been bringing for a few weeks now. And I'm glad he's helping us along on these crusades, because the truth is very few people know the cruelty of the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, even though it's in their Bible, even though it's shown in the Holy Scriptures, in Acts of the Apostles, they know nothing about it. But the Apostle Shaul, if you can remember, he said he drugged men, women, and children. He'd go out finding them. And he got his orders from the Roman general. Is that who he got his orders from? Remember? No, he got them from the high priest. If you were a Pharisee, you were a Roman citizen. Now, that Roman state had to be invented long before that. And if you were a Pharisee in Jerusalem, never been to Rome, and that's all shown in Acts, in the Acts of the Apostles. And Shaul was the one that Yahweh chose to show that. The great apostle Shaul. Now, of course, before he was converted, which, if you remember, Yeshua met him on the road. This was a great event, because it showed that they can, Yahweh and Yeshua now could convert anyone. Anyone they choose to call. And of course, Yahweh said it ahead of time, of course, and the ones that he's called to his house, you were predestinated, as your King James Version says, preordained, as the book of Yahweh says, you were preordained to become a son or daughter of Yahweh. And that's the reason you're here at his house training at this time. But the Apostle Shaul, he'd get his orders from the high priest, and then he would go out and to the different cities or just people hiding in the brush, in the woods. They had a congregation there, a gathering that took place. And they wanted to keep the laws of Yahweh. And, of course, that was a no-no at that time, because of the fact that the Pharisees, Sadducees, and Essenes didn't want any part of Yahweh anymore or his law. They didn't want his name spoken, period. And they threatened the prophets of prophesying in the name of Yahweh. And they changed the name even before Yeremia's time. But Yeremia spoke of it. He was prophesied to tell us about it, that they took the name out and caused the people to forget the name for Lord. Well, Lord, of course, was the dead Pharisees, the dead rabbis, the dead pharaohs in Egypt. And, of course, there's where what come the celebration of Christmas, which Pat Robertson is finally coming out on. And of course, we're getting letters and people here from the very advertisement that Pat Robertson made on his show. And they called the House of Yahweh and they say, I heard about the House of Yahweh. I heard about Yahweh on the Pat Robertson show. I looked it up and there was Israel Hawkins Says. And I read and I read and I read and I read and I read. So there, every little bit helps here, and of course I think it's inspired. You know, Yahweh can inspire any spirit too. But if you remember now, the opposing Babylon. That's what the House of Yahweh was created to do in this time period, and to let the people know, all over the world. It says, from the rising of the sun to the setting of the same. And that don't mean the sun goes up and down or the earth turns around. When you see the setting of the sun, it doesn't make any difference how it got there. But you know it went behind the horizon when it set. So don't get screwed up on that. We've had people do that, believe it or not. On that very thing, well, he said the sun rises and sets. That means the earth don't turn, but the sun goes around the earth. No, no, it doesn't mean anything like that. It has nothing to do with that. But that's a whole nother subject, and maybe we should get into that field, but I really don't see any need to, you know. And I don't think you get to save that person if you did. But our job is, as Isaiah 45 says, I've called you, Israel and Jacob, so that they will know from the rising of the sun till the setting thereof, all around the earth, all around the world, that they will know all around the world that I can foretell the future. I am the only power. There is no gods beside me. I don't have anything to do with these gods. They're enemies of my work, and there won't be any gods when this is finished. And his finishing work, praise Yahweh, finishing work is us, the seventh lamp on the seven lampstand. And that was given in the beginning now. All of these prophecies was given in the beginning. Well, Yahweh foretells the future. That's something that no one can do except him. And he can inspire people to foretell the future, but they can't do it on their own. They don't have that power. Jane Dixon pretended she could, and she was right about maybe 50% of the time with her guessing, but Yahweh is right 100% of the time. He doesn't guess. He doesn't guess, and he commands the host. Well, only you and the ones that we have told know about this host. You know, that it's the microorganisms. And by the way, that was a wonderful lesson here today on that very subject. But the host, the microorganisms, they control the whole universe because Yahweh commanded them to do so. They bring you rain. They bring you the proper amount of sunshine. They bring health to your bodies. There's many kingdoms working in your body right now, supplying every joint, every organ with its needs. That's how your body is run. That's how Yahweh puts you together. And he said, keep it this way now. Don't send things into your body that will destroy these microorganisms. He didn't put it in that manner, but he puts it in the scriptures. And, of course, it's hidden from the wise and the prudent, but it's revealed to the babes and the sucklings, and they understand it now. And they praise Yahweh because of what they see in the Holy Scriptures now. Even the six-year-olds. I was corrected about that here a while back. Yahweh can foretell the future. The gods can't. No human being can foretell the future. And now he's set in Yaakov and Israel. He says, I'm going to choose two people, and he names them, and from them all the world is going to know this thing. Yes, that's in Isaiah 45. And 44 gives you the name of those two brothers. They're two brothers. It's a wonderful prophecy there. You really need to read it. I tell you what you can do. If you got a Yisrael Says program, type in the word witness or witnesses, either one, punch a button and it'll come up in front of your eyes, and all you have to do is just study and study and study. Praise Yahweh. It's all there pulled up for you in one lump sum. Well, Yahweh's prophets prophesied against those who spoke by the authority of the gods. You remember that Satan visited Eve, and she spoke to Eve. Well, actually, it wasn't Satan that spoke to Eve, but she inspired the priest, Satan's priest, who's called Popes now. That's the one that the Pope worships. They call her Mary now. But a rose by any other name, or a leopard by any other name, whatever, a bear by any other name is still a bear. And so is she. Now, this word, lords and gods, was from the beginning. And of course, they had two trees. And they weren't actually trees, were they? So you know all of those scriptures, surely. No, they were two priesthoods, two different priests, Christianity and the house of Yahweh. That's exactly what they were. The house of Yahweh taught Yahweh's perfection, his laws, his perfect laws, and said, be perfect as Yahweh is perfect. The other tree brought forth evil along with this righteousness that the other priesthood was bringing. And of course, the evil grew and the people loved it. Let's turn to Yeremiah here. Yeremiah, the 23rd chapter, and we'll get a little bit deeper into this subject today. Yeremiah 23. Now, we read this yesterday. Woe unto the shepherds who destroy and scatter my sheep. Well, of course, this was the Roman Catholic Church under another name at that time. They were called priests of Israel. Before that, they were called the elders of Israel. Before that, they were called Korites from the Levites, started with the Levites and grew from there, and the temple was turned over to them so they could have their way. And Yahweh did not hold back from them. Like he said, he turned it over to them. Well, these were the ones now that he was talking to and said, you're scattering my flock in verse 2 there. Their pastors, says, against the pastors. So they had pastors and priests and preachers and so forth in the land of Israel. And you have scattered my flock, he said, and driven them away. Driven them away from my house. Well, these were the ones that the Apostle Shaul went out hunting. And when he found them, he would drag them back in chains, men, women, and children. And as Barack Obama says, much like today, were the Crusades at that time. Barack Obama didn't know or hasn't put it together yet, but he will now, that this was actually started way back here in Yeremiah. Which of the prophets have your fathers not persecuted, he said. Your fathers? Well, he's speaking, of course, to the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, Herodians, the lawyers. They had lawyers. They call them Masons now, but they called them lawyers or priest of the law, who would strive to find someone that they could file charges on, that, you know, like Yeshua or Yochanan, and they would see it, well, they're breaking this law, see, and then they'd file charges on them, arrest them. And of course, if you read about this crusades, the person could not say anything for themselves. They wasn't allowed to know who the ones that accused them were. They could present in the court certain people as saying that they were their enemies, and they made out like that would sway the jury, because if he named somebody that had turned in information on them, well, and the person named them and said, that one is my enemy, but he's just guessing as to who it was because he didn't even know who accused him. And it might have been a cruel police officer or a cruel person with a sword that had been the one to accuse him, because they got his property. And the property influenced them. They got their wealth, so they're being paid to find people with wealth that they could accuse of being a heretic, as they called them, a heretic. A heretic was one that didn't believe what the Catholic Church was putting out. Now, that's in the days of what they're calling the Crusades, and they're blind right now because the Crusades are still going on. And that's what Barack Obama is saying, that the Crusades are still going on. They're just like the ones the Christians were doing. Well, the Christians are still, they still got Crusades going. They killed some Yahweh people up north. They burnt to death some Yahweh people down at Waco. Waco is again in the news big time this week with shootings, motorcycle. So, you know, Caesar has his problems. He may be giving other people problems, but he has his problems too. And several lost their lives down there this week in a big shootout at some kind of road joint. But I will gather, Yahweh says, now I'm going to gather my flock from all these countries. Well, that's what he's done. And believe it or not, your parents all came from those countries. These were the ones that were being persecuted. They went out and they formed settlements. And of course, some of them kept fleeing more and more. As Yeshua said, you persecuted in one country, one city, flee to another. Well, of course, this is what they did. And they set up a settlement in a place where, you know, nobody will surely find us here. Well, of course, this roving army that they had would eventually discover them and map out that area and know exactly where they were. And they would say, come to Babylon with us, and, you know, and we'll make you rich and you can be a part of us. Well, of course, if they were like the ones in Galilee, they'd know that they couldn't do that. So this is where they lost their lives, or they were taken prisoners and so forth. That's the reason they started coming to this land. That's the reason they were here when Columbus got here. They were many of them here already, and they called them American Indians because Columbus thought he settled in India. He thought he went to shore in India, so he called them Indians. Well, of course, they were Hebrews. They came. You know who they came from, right? They came from Noah and his sons, just like you did. They came from the 12 tribes. Yes, from Noah and his sons came down to your families, and your families was brought here. This is the gathering place that he's talking about here. Now, I think I've made that plain yesterday and today. And they will, he's going to gather them together, and they're going to be fruitful, and they're going to increase. That's Yahweh's promise to you. Yahweh's other promise to you is those who try to escape from fear will be caught in another pit, as he calls it, but they won't escape. There's no escaping what is set up in this world today. I thought the person who went into it, broke into the person's house, a rich man's house. It was on the news this week. I don't think we showed it. But he broke into They think there's more. But they broke into this people's house. I think there's four in the family. They tortured them, especially the child. And the parents gave in because they could hear their child screaming for mercy in another room. And of course, they gave in. They sent called and made a someone go get $40,000, bring it to the person. They had him the next day in jail, you know, and he was too stupid. The man was so stupid. He's smart enough to own a gun. He is smart enough to hit with the fist and hurt people. But you could tell how stupid the man was. They had him in jail the next day, even though he escaped with $40,000. It was no problem to find this man and put him in jail. There's no escaping. With this beast has eyes everywhere. Eyes and ears. Osama bin Laden. Look how long he survived out there. They knew where he was for years. They didn't have him fooled. He didn't have them fooled. And they went and got him when they wanted to, when the time was right for them to do so. You know, think of it. The safety. There is no safety except in this protected place. That's the only place. Well, he's gathered you together here, and you're going to be fruitful and multiply if you'll turn loose of your old ways, repent, and do what the Scripture shows you to do through the one sent. Don't go out on your own. You'll be leaving because you think the sun rises and sets, and we're arguing that the sun rises and sets instead of the earth turning it around. That's how stupid a person can get when they go out on their own. They lose it. They forget what they even came here for. Submit yourself to submission, and you will be here forever. That sounds like a song, don't it? You could almost start putting rhymes to that right now. And I will set up shepherds over them who will feed them. I will set up shepherds over them who will feed them. Not like these up here who will scatter the flock, but who will feed them, and they will fear no more. Well, that's what I'm trying to get out of you now. Yahweh is with us. He's in 100% control. If you will submit yourself totally, you won't be drug out of this house, and you will be protected. And they will fear no more, nor be dismayed, which there's going to be some of this going on. This amazing things that's going to be occurring in the heavens that we've just seen the beginning of now. We've seen the beginning of this, and which involves the microorganisms in heaven. And of course, the elements will melt with fervent heat. You're going to see that. But you shouldn't fear when you start seeing that. When you see this, remember this scripture. They will fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither will they be lacking. Neither will they be lacking, says Yahweh. You're going to have everything you need. Now, you won't have the wants if you're still wanting to go to town and go shopping and get yourself sick and bring back sickness to the camp and so forth. We're all going to come out of this very, very soon. Be ready to do so. You don't have to go to town every week. I just got through telling you. How often did my mother go to town? There you go. Praise Yahweh. Remember that. That's a victory sign, isn't it? Turn it this way and was it me? Praise Yahweh. Before the days come, before the days come, says Yahweh, behold, the days come. It's going to come. Behold, the day is going to come, says Yahweh, that I will raise to David a righteous branch. A righteous branch? Now, you got to remember that one, too. No, I'm not unrighteous, and I don't want to be unrighteous, and I'm never going to be unrighteous. I'll never turn to that again. I've repented before the elders, and they all know my past sins. And of course, I don't intend to ever turn back to sin. They repented to me before me, and they feel the same way I do about sin. So when he said that, he meant it. He's going to be righteous. You can count on that. Don't call Yahweh a liar. You can count on everything that he says there. Search out the book of Yahweh and read. Not one of these will fail. Not one. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next leader. I love you!